today how tens of thousands of children have become addicted to gambling.
I've reported on a lot of different things in my life. I've reported on revenge porn, and I've interviewed a Taliban commander in Afghanistan, and nothing has frightened me in quite the same way as investigating this did.
Jenny Kleeman is talking about her investigation into gambling. These days, the temptation to bet is everywhere. Think about when you're watching football. The names of betting firms are right there on the players' shirts.
I've been special in Milan. Special.
Then there are the adverts you see, even during primetime TV.
The daily jackpot must be won by 11 p.m. every night.
And the pop-ups when you're on the internet with bright colours and whirring graphics.
Welcome to the world's favourite online betting company.
It's all incredibly enticing.
We feature over 300,000 different sporting events. We want you to feel so close.
And they're not just attracting adults.
Oh, please, gamble responsibly.
From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, how the gambling industry got its claws into children.
I just became aware of a massive, unseen, insidious problem where you have incredibly profitable corporate interests. They've almost become too big to challenge, and nobody's really prepared to challenge them apart from the people who've really felt the effects of this industry.
Hi, Jenny.
Hello, Liz. How are you?
We're okay. We're kind of muddling on through.
I spoke to Liz and Charles Ritchie, who are parents of three children. Their youngest child was Jack, and Jack started gambling when he was 17.
You're breaking up a bit. Hold on, you're frozen.
Yeah, you're breaking up slightly.
They were talking to me from the family kitchen, sitting at the kitchen table, and even though we were doing it over Zoom from their home in Sheffield, you could tell that they had, you know, eyes that demand to be met. They were looking straight down the camera at me and really determined to tell their story.
So he was a happy person?
Yes, very happy, yes.
Tell me about when he started to gamble.
He and his friends, so a big group of sixth formers, used to go out in their dinner hour and gamble in the local bookies on the fixed odd betting terminals with their dinner money. You know, a number of them ended up with some degree of problem. And Jack had a big win very early on, I mean, like almost immediately. And he came home from school with £1,000 in cash. And he had to go back after school to collect the money. So they must have known that he was underage.
He was 17 in the sixth form. Nobody asked any questions. So, of course, this was an enormous amount of money for him. He didn't tell his parents about it until a year later, when that money was long gone. The money he'd inherited from his grandmother was long gone because he couldn't stop gambling.
And at that stage, I think when he told us, you know, we were naive about gambling and the dangers of gambling as well. And we kind of really sort of thought, well, this is a young man growing up, doing stupid things, you know, experimenting. And OK, he's lost a chunk of money, but, you know, he'll move on.
There are some classic traits that psychiatrists have identified that make people more susceptible to having a gambling problem. Being impulsive at age 7 is supposed to make you more likely to have a gambling problem as you grow up, or having problem gambling within the family, either because gambling is normalised or because there might be some traits that you've inherited. This just didn't seem to be the case for the Ritchie family.
We've had the odd times where we bought a lottery ticket, but
not a gambling family at all.
They knew that he had to stop, and so they took him around all the bookies in Sheffield, and Jack left a photograph and signed a form that would have him excluded from those high street bookies.
It's interesting then. So he really did understand that it wasn't a good thing for him to do.
He did. And Charles tells me that he was ashamed that, you know, he was this young, good looking guy with his whole life ahead of him, about to go to university, and he was going into these deeply depressing places with his dad.
And there would be effectively silence in there, and there would be people sitting in front of these machines pressing the button metronomically. It is a desperate, desperate activity.
And he was saying, you know, Dad, this isn't who I am.
Presumably, Liz and Charles hoped that by visiting the bookies, they'd nip this in the bud.
Almost as soon as he did this, Jack began betting online on the websites of the same high street bookies that he had been visiting on foot. His gambling wasn't constant. It was intermittent, and it was often triggered by he'd get some sort of unsolicited marketing email from one of these bookies and it would draw him in again. When he went to university, he blew his entire student grant on these gambling websites and he was playing online roulette.
And it was when he came home at Christmas, so the Christmas after his first term, and he again told us that he was worried. And so what we did at that point was we bought blocking software for his computer.
Yeah.
And he actually didn't gamble then for the next year. You know, we can tell from his account. Yeah. So that protected him. And I think at the end of that year, we had forgotten really about, you know, gambling because it was suddenly no longer an issue.
Yeah.
And I said, he was the same, that he kind of thought, okay, I'm all right. But again, looking at his accounts, we can see that when the blocking software came to an end, he crept back into online gambling.
And you said that Jack by this time was 18, but are there any rules online to protect younger people, to stop kids?
I mean, you're supposed to not be able to access them until you're 18. You have to have access to a credit card to be able to get online. But, you know, children are resourceful things and they find ways to get around it. And if you look at some of the way that these sites are designed and all the kind of bright colours, they look like computer games. They look like the sort of things that young children are much more used to seeing in computer games and websites that they play on. So whilst they may not be explicitly targeting younger people, they are certainly attractive to a lot of them.
Do you have any sense of what Jack was going through during this period, of how he felt about it and how it affected other parts of his life?
Gambling problems in adults are measured in terms of the sums of money lost. And, you know, throughout my entire article, I was looking at young people and they never lost vast amounts of money. The damage done to them was more the damage to their sense of self at a time when they were supposed to be discovering themselves and finding out who they were. This sense of not having any control over themselves.
He said, this is an insult to my intelligence. He felt like he was destroying himself, his own cleverness. And he was proud of his cleverness.
Well, it's undermining your identity, isn't it?
Exactly.
At that point in your life, that crucial window where you're really forming your identity.
Exactly.
And Jack wanted to get away from it. He agreed to have that software put on his phone, but as you say, it ran out. What happened next?
He left university and decided that he was going to go abroad and teach English as a foreign language. He found that incredibly fulfilling, and he went to Vietnam, where gambling is illegal. And he hadn't gambled for 3 months before he went to Vietnam. So his family, Liz and Charles, thought that he was free of it. He felt that he was free of it.
Jack made friends very, very easily. So he generated a really close set of friends, loved the teaching. The future looked great. I think that we were very positive. He was very positive.
And what were you Skyping and emailing?
More than once a week, I mean, every few days, really.
I mean, we are a very close family, you know. Yeah, he was thousands of miles away, but we were in absolutely regular contact. And one of the things, and again, it just sort of shows the warmth of him, was that Joanna, she worries about things in life. And so, you know, she would often, if she was walking home from work and was worried, she would speak to him on the phone and he would talk her, you know, to her, until she got home. Mm-hmm. And it was just that looking after your big sister, even though you're thousands of miles away.
He Skyped his parents one Sunday saying that he was feeling down because he's gambled again illegally using these websites of British bookmakers. And he'd lost, I think, about £1,000. And Liz and Charles paid off his overdraft, which was this £1,000, and bought some blocking software, which he installed on his computer then and there, or so they thought.
So on the Monday, I Skyped him again, and he said, oh, I'm watching Black Mirror with my friend. Can we talk tomorrow? Mm. When your kid says that, you think, they're with their friends and they're happy. Mm. And then on the Wednesday at lunchtime, our time, we just got a suicide note by email. We got it pretty quickly and immediately obviously tried to contact him. And his sister set up a closed Facebook group to find him. One of his friends was teaching in the same building as him in the next door classroom. And he basically left the class and just went to where they recognised where Jack said he was, because he didn't say where he was. He had posted a picture on Facebook and they recognised it. And he went, and it wasn't that far away. But by the time he got there, the police were arriving and Jack was dead.
Hmm. I can't imagine what it must have been like to get that note, and also to get that note when you're so far away. It must have been.
Yes.
It must have been terrifying.
Yes. Well, obviously.
Did they talk about the period after his death? Were they convinced that his death was linked to his gambling addiction?
They say they have absolutely no doubt. In the hours leading up to his death, they managed to piece together that he had sort of spent all morning gambling, lost money, and had then gone to take his own life. And in fact, the coroner at the inquest into his death accepted that Jack's death was caused by gambling.
We're, you know, very close to a lot of his friends since Jack has died. And everybody knew that Jack was gambling. Nobody saw it as being kind of a problem that they should be worried about.
Yeah, or life-threatening. I feel like if we'd been told it was as serious as him being addicted to heroin, we would have behaved very differently.
Yeah. And they began to realise they were not alone. They got put in touch with another family, local family, who had lost another son. They began to search out other families. They contacted coroner's offices. They went through local newspapers and got in touch with a really large number of families who'd lost children with gambling problems. All of these young people had started gambling before they were 18.
Liz and Charles went on to set up a charity called Gambling with Lives to support those families in a similar situation to theirs. Jack was 24 when he died, and his parents think he'd lost around £30,000 from gambling. Obviously, he was an adult by then, but he began when he was 17. And I think that's one of the really shocking things, the number of people beginning this when they're children. Do we know what the scale of the problem is nationally?
I mean, in 2019, the Gambling Commission, so this is the gambling regulator, not some pressure group, published findings that there are 55,000 problem gamblers between the age of 11 and 16 in this country, and that in that age group, gambling is more popular than smoking or taking drugs. 11% of 11 to 16-year-olds say they gamble once a week. That is 450,000 children aged 11 to 16.
I mean, it's unbelievable. How on earth did we get into this situation?
The Labour government, through the Gambling Act, which came into force in 2007, allowed betting firms to advertise.
Train, prepare, plan, race.
And they can sponsor sporting events. Half of the Premier League have the logos of betting firms on their shirts.
What, you can create your own bet?
Yeah, and you get instant odds.
And the gambling industry now spends £1.5 billion a year on marketing.
Make it your bet. William Hill, build your odds.
That's combined with the rise of new digital gambling products that are particularly addictive. So it used to be the case that you'd bet on the outcome of an event, like a horse race or a football match. But now you can spot bet in football on who's going to take the next penalty, who's going to get the next yellow card. And whereas in the past there was time to pause and reflect on your losses, now you can just continually gamble on all different aspects of a game.
I can look at 12 horses and the form all at once.
Come on.
The app is my paddock.
Particularly online, a lot of these online games reward you with auditory and visual congratulations, even when you're losing. So you get that dopamine hit, even when you're losing. And, you know, studies have shown that in animals and humans, this is an extremely addictive pattern. So those two factors, the normalisation of gambling through advertising and the fact that the way people gamble now is much more addictive, that I think has led to this problem.
Why did the Labour government do this?
I think they thought they would get good tax revenues. I think there was this idea that, you know, you should respect people to make their own choices. But also back in those days, there were no iPhones and nobody had any idea that we would be able to be online 24 hours a day and that, you know, very young children would have tiny devices that connected them to the internet on them all the time.
You say young children, and of course I'm immediately panicking about what my kids are doing on screens. How are they being caught into this?
Liz Ritchie, Jack's mother, is a retired clinician. She comes from a psychology background, and her take on this is that children are being groomed to be gamblers through the normalisation of gambling in advertising and also through computer games. There was a recent study that said 80% of computer games, even ones aimed at very young children, have things called loot boxes in them. I had never heard of loot boxes until I started reporting on this.
What is a loot box?
You see, we're showing our age there. A loot box is basically, they are mystery rewards that you can spend either real cash or virtual cash on. So you earn coins and you cash them in on a box of loot and you don't know what's inside it.
Let's just get on to it. We're going to be opening one, at least one of every single loot box.
It's something like, it could be a hat for your character or an accessory for your character. And it might be something you really, really want. It might be something rare.
Loot boxes and no!
Or it might be something you don't really care about, but you have to spend money, virtual or real money, in order to open this box.
I mean, now you've described it, I know exactly what a loot box is because my seven-year-old pesters me to try and open boxes in what I thought was seven-year-old suitable games.
It's exactly the same mentality, which is that you are staking money or staking something that you have worked for, something of value, for an unknown reward. And it could be something really valuable to you or it could be something that you don't care about. That's gambling.
And I have to say, I also feel like I'm seeing loads of gambling ads on television.
I was doing a lot of the reporting for this during lockdown, so I was noticing it more. And I was watching an episode of Gogglebox on Channel 4 in April, so in the depths of lockdown. And I noticed in every one of the three advert breaks, there were adverts for betting sites. And it's always presented as a bit of fun, bright colours, slot machines, different bits of graphics whirring. And, you know, there's been some research done on this that during lockdown, people are gambling more, even though there aren't live sports fixtures to bet on. Because the whole point about gambling now is you can do it on your phone, you can do it 24 hours a day, you can do it without anyone noticing. And some of the leading psychiatrists who work with gamblers for the NHS actually called on the gambling industry to suspend advertising during lockdown. And it took them 3 weeks to even begin to pull their ads, during which time they were advertising more aggressively than ever before.
It seems to me that the decision to liberalise the gambling industry was an economic decision, whilst it's increasingly clear that gambling addiction is a health problem. Is it treated as one today?
It is treated as a health problem by the NHS. When I spoke to clinicians in the NHS who described the harm done from problem gambling, it sounded like drug addiction. It was, you know, people steal money from their friends, they lie to their parents, they tell their parents they've been kidnapped and that they'll be hurt if their parents don't give them money. It sounded to me like someone with a drug problem. So Henrietta Boden-Jones, who is, you know, one of the leading experts on gambling disorder in this country, was in no doubt that gambling disorder is a mental illness.
It is recognised by diagnostic manuals all over the world, and it manifests with loss of control, and the harm can be experienced in all areas of someone's life. Young people at school. Sadly, we've had a lot of students dropping out of university in the past. And I think the academic impact in young people is enormous.
Coming up, who is taking responsibility for problem gambling among children? So what needs to be done about this? What do the campaigners, the health experts that you've spoken to, and people like Liz and Charles and the other families believe is necessary to try to tackle this?
They say there are many different reasons why children are developing gambling problems. Advertising is an issue, sponsorship is an issue, age verification is an issue. But they also say parental control is an issue. Parents need to watch what their children are doing online and what they're spending their money on. But obviously, the parents I spoke to for the article did everything they could to stop their kids from going online. and to control their money. And for them, it's very clear. They say the Gambling Act needs to be revised. It needs to be focused on stopping, preventing gambling harm rather than minimising it, which is, I think, the way it's phrased at the moment. And that the gambling industry needs to be held liable for the harm it causes to people. For Liz Ritchie, I mean, she's a remarkable woman, and she doesn't mince her words. She said,
I think it's potentially like the opioid scandal in America, where you've got a legal product that's generating a pool of addicts, particularly in the young.
And it's something that in a few years' time we will look back on and say, we can't believe we allowed this to happen. But I think that changing the law is going to be very difficult because these are now extremely profitable companies that pay a lot of tax that will fight the government every step of the way if the government ever decided it was going to try and change the law.
Have the government made any reforms to improve things?
There has, of course, been one reform, which is on fixed odds betting terminals. Those were the ones that first drew Jack Ritchie into gambling. That last year, the maximum amount you were allowed to stake has been reduced. It's gone down from £100 every 20 seconds to £2 every 20 seconds. And these were known to be, you know, the most addictive of all products inside high street bookies. They were known as the crack cocaine of gambling.
What about the companies themselves? We know this is fueling a mental health problem so significant in young people that in December, the NHS set up the first gambling clinic for children. What is the industry doing?
The gambling industry, there's a voluntary levy on the gambling industry to fund projects that are supposed to counteract gambling harm. I think they spent £10 million last year on that. That's compared to the £1.5 billion they spend on marketing. And GamblerWare, which is the industry body, funds GamCare, which runs Helpline. And it also runs outreach projects for young people where they go into schools and talk to sixth formers about gambling. But of course, they don't teach abstinence. They teach everything in moderation. The gambling industry has this slogan, when the fun stops, stop, which suggests that it's easy to stop as soon as you realise you're not having fun.
That in the end cannot be the answer, can it? It cannot be down to individuals to police this. In the end, is it going to need, in the eyes of Liz and Charles, for example, a change that comes from the top and a change that perhaps marks a major cultural shift in the way we think about gambling?
I think, sadly, the onus is on parents to be very aware of what their children are doing online and to have conversations with their children about how these games are made and how the gambling industry operates. And the fact that it's such a profitable industry is because people lose their money. Because as it stands, I think it's going to be very difficult for any government to ask the gambling industry to do less marketing. So we have to be able to provide an alternative message.
Jenny Kleeman, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Jenny Kleeman with an investigation that really shocked me, as I'm sure it has you. Do read her reporting on this at theguardian.com. It's called My Son Was Shaking, Trying Not to Go Online, How the Gambling Industry Got Its Claws into Children. You can read more from Liz and Charles, as well as other families affected by this. If you're concerned about anything you've heard on this podcast, there are support groups out there to help. In the UK and Ireland, Samaritans can be contacted on 116 123 or email jo@samaritans.org or jo@samaritans.ie. The National Problem Gambling Clinic can be contacted on 0207 381 7722 or gambling.cnwl@nhs.net. The NHS Northern Gambling Service can be contacted on 0300 300 1490 or referral.nqs@nhs.net. In the US, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 1-800-273-8255. Other international suicide helplines can be found at befrienders.org. We went to the Gambling Commission about this podcast that regulates the industry, and a spokesman said that protecting vulnerable people and children from gambling-related harm is at the heart of what they do. He highlighted last year's national strategy to reduce gambling harms, in which a priority area of focus was education, including distributing money to educational projects in different parts of the country. He added, in the last 2 years, we have also delivered a comprehensive programme of tougher enforcement and compliance activity. We have strengthened protections, including online agent ID verification, customer interaction, and in April, we banned gambling on credit cards. He said they'd worked with the industry to strengthen advertising rules to better protect vulnerable groups and have challenged the industry to reduce the amount of online advertising seen by children. That's it for today. Many thanks to Liz and Charles Ritchie and to Jenny Kleeman. This episode was produced by Hannah Moore. Sound design was by Nicholas Cox. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.